Welcome back to the Hardware Unboxed podcast. Steve is with me today to talk about all sorts of news. We've got some Intel CPUs potentially being, destroyed or at least having a few issues with factory settings and crashes and things like that. So we're going to talk about that, potentially some of the causes or at least what we think is going on there. Steve's been testing some B650 motherboards that have turned out to be absolute dumpster fires. So a bit of a breakdown of that stuff. And then, a few other things, how Intel's going in the CPU market, discontinuing processors, XeSS 1.3, lots of interesting stuff in this podcast. So news focus, let's get into it. Hello, Steve. How's it going? Podcasting again.
Podcasting? Podcasting.
Good start.
First thing I say. Well, lucky it's not live because you'll definitely edit that out and we just had a do-over. So I don't even know. What was I going to say, Tim? I don't even know.
I don't know. You stuffed up like the second word, so...
So thanks for watching, everyone. Hopefully you enjoyed that podcast. No, I think I was going to say the podcast this week, I wasn't sure if it was going to happen because I won't go into details of your illness because it's one of those fun ones, but you had gastro or a gastro-like
something like
thing.
That. Yeah. Look, I don't know what was happening, but just actually maybe I shouldn't say on the podcast what was happening. I won't say because people will immediately switch off never listen to us again.
Yeah, it was hitting the fan things over at your place.
Yeah, so, just both ends action.
Anywho, you've come through for us. We are filming this on a Friday and it is lunchtime. I just had a good lunch and I'm ready for a nap. So that's probably why I can't talk properly. But we do have some topics to get into. So before I screw else up, I'm not going to touch anything. We should probably just get into it and start having a bit of a conversation.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about Intel CPUs. I don't really know how to describe this. There's been reports of 13th and 14th gen CPUs crashing in games. That's basically where this story starts. People have been playing various different titles, some Unreal Engine 5 games, but doesn't seem necessarily restricted to Unreal Engine 5 games. But nevertheless, some people have, high-end 13th and 14th gen K-series processors. They're getting various different errors. Games are crashing. And it seems to be related to maybe the CPUs being pushed a bit too hard, but I don't know how much you've read into this story, being our main CPU guy, but it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, look, I've heard of the story. It seems we're obviously talking about it because there seems to be some legitimacy to the story. So it's not just a couple of guys on Reddit who probably tuned their memory too aggressively are claiming that the CPUs are crashing. It does sound like this is happening on stock 13th and 14th gen CPUs,
yes,
likely the higher clocked K SKU, probably Core i9 parts, the games that would probably generate a certain CPU load and probably a heavier CPU load are the ones that are seeing the behavior, and it's become prevalent to the point where Nvidia's weighed in on it because people were blaming Nvidia GPUs for crashing under certain conditions. And Nvidia's come out and said it's the Intel CPU that the users were using, and they recommend downclocking the CPUs to fix the problem. So that's all quite interesting, the fact that you have Nvidia responding to this problem and essentially, you could say blaming Intel, but if the blame's fairly placed, they're more just explaining what the problem is. And we have seen this sort of thing in the past, and this is also... To sort of steer this in the direction of, from our perspective, reviewing CPUs, we're often criticized by PC enthusiasts for being normies and uneducated on overclocking and all that sort of stuff and not making a big deal about that in our reviews. But there's a real reason, we've talked about it before, why we don't overclock CPUs and do max overclock results, because that can really mean basically.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Basically anything, and we test fairly stock. We load, you know, XMP Expo, so stuff that we expect most enthusiasts would do, but we don't go and manually tinker with timings. We don't do any core overclocking, undervolting, tuning of anything like that. It's like whatever the motherboard does, whatever you can pretty much call a stock configuration, that's what we tend to test, because we don't want it to be on us to have to validate the stability of one specific setup and then just blanket statement attribute that to all configurations. So it'd be weird if we got a 14900K and we're like, but you can get 20% more performance by memory tuning, which may be the case for certain configurations. But then is our claimed performance even stable to begin with? Look, it's very difficult to determine 100% stability for a start. And even companies like Intel have had trouble with that in the past, and maybe in this example. So we just avoid all of that. And that's why we don't do overclocking and tuning and stuff like that. If we do overclocking, there's a heavy disclaimer that, you know, your mileage may vary. This is just what we were able to do under our test configuration, but you may see better results or worse results. And, you know, that the whole silicon lottery thing. And there are other factors at play as well. But this is interesting, this story, for a start. I personally haven't seen any stability issues with my stock 13th and 14th gen systems, though I say that, and while I wouldn't just attribute this to the CPU being clocked too high in its factory spec, my 13900K gaming PC does once every few months just black screen and then restart. But there's probably a dozen things I would attribute to that like, could be the Asus motherboard. I have updated every single time a BIOS comes out, but it still seems to happen, which is funny because my AMD test system and gaming PC never, ever crash. But that's not to say AMD's more stable. I just bring that up because people criticize AM5 for instability, which we haven't experienced. I think you and I talked about this recently, and you were saying yours has been rock solid, Balan's editing PC. But I've certainly seen AM5 motherboards that suck and are a nightmare. And if I bought, and we'll talk about this more because I've been doing some B650 testing, but if I bought these specific AM5 motherboards with my hard-earned money and it was the only board I had and it was giving me the headaches that I've seen with them, yeah, I wouldn't be speaking too highly of AM5 either. But that's sort of the problem we've seen with the complexity of testing CPUs and platforms, that it can be memory, motherboard, you can get unlucky, it can be all sorts of stuff. But with this too aggressively clocked from factory thing, I'm sure you remember, Tim, back to the year 2000 when Intel released their flagship Pentium 3 processor.
Yes, very clearly remember, because I was just a young lad and I was very interested in the goings-on of Pentium 3 CPUs.
How old were you in 2000?
I was single digits years old.
Yes, that makes sense.
So I would have been, pretty young,
Sub 10. So, yes, well, I must have been around 16 or something like that at the time, I guess, somewhere there. But it's a interesting time period because this was when I actually started doing what I do today. I started my own tech website. There wasn't too many tech websites at the time. I was sort of learning about technology while I was doing it. And I actually was sent this processor from Intel Australia after, Niantic and other Tom's Hardware and those guys got it. But I got it just before this issue was discovered, and subsequently the CPU was recalled because of those issues. But if those of you who are old enough to remember, it was code name Copper Mine, and it was the Pentium 3, and it's a bit of an interesting one. It was a 1.13 gigahertz CPU. And the reason why Intel went with that was because there was an Athlon 1.1 gigahertz coming out, and it was all about the megahertz, gigahertz back then. So they wanted to, Intel wanted to remain the market leader, I suppose, and just outdo AMD. So they rushed out this CPU that was clocked too aggressively, didn't have the voltages and tuning to support it, and under specific workloads would crash. And Tom's Hardware, credit them, they found this out 24 years ago. So the CPUs were essentially recalled, and I think it took about 6 months before they got a new stepping out that would work at those frequencies. So a bit of a blunder there, I think it was 2001 by the time they got those CPUs out. So yeah, a bit of a blunder by Intel. Mm. But it's pretty interesting to look back and sort of see that these mistakes, if that's what we're looking at today, made 24 years ago. So, yeah, it's not necessarily a brand new thing.
Yeah, and in both instances, the solution was, it's pretty much an identical copy of the result. If you had that CPU and you downclocked it, the stability issues were fixed. And the same thing seems to be happening with the 13th and 14th gen parts. The current fix people are suggesting is getting the Intel Extreme Tuning Utility and just turning it down very slightly so that your CPUs are more stable. And yeah, it's a very interesting one, because I guess as well, in both circumstances, it's really competition driven as to why these parts are clocked at the levels that they are clocked. Mm-hmm. AMD currently is very, very competitive, so Intel are trying to get as much performance as they can out of the silicon that they have to, get up there in the charts, have equivalent gaming performance or whatever they can achieve. And so they've tried to make these CPUs as close to the limits of the silicon as possible. And, what you're just describing is a bit of a different issue. Like, they come out with a 1.1 gigahertz part. They're trying to make the number on the box appear just that little bit bigger. So they, increase it to 1.13 gigahertz, which, oh, wow. But, it's sort of, that was a competition decision, right? Like, they didn't necessarily need to release a part clocked at that level, but they did it for various competition reasons. So, yeah, Intel says that they're aware of the problem and are sort of looking into what's going on there. But it also seems that from various reports that I've read that these issues tend to crop up after several months of use, potentially the CPUs are being degraded over the course of, a couple of months, and then you start seeing stability issues at, 3, 4, 5 months in, which again sort of points to there being voltage frequency issues there and being pushed, potentially to the limit. And again, we could be talking about, let's say, the edge case 5-10% of CPUs where they're being sold as 13900Ks or 14900Ks or whatever, but, they're not quite binned as well as the top end silicon is sold under the same CPU name. Mm-hmm. So there's always, among 13900Ks, for example, there's always some variance in the parts. They're not all exactly the same silicon, which is why some are more amenable to overclocking, some can undervolt a bit better as well. Mm-hmm. And so, if they're being pushed too far and potentially, 90% of these parts are fine, but 10% are sort of the bottom 10% of chips, and they're starting to come into, they're having issues with stability and so forth, then it's not a great situation, but at least Intel has finally said that they're doing something about it. Because I remember hearing about this at least a few months ago now, when sort of the first report started to come out, I guess.
Yeah, the degradation angle's interesting, because obviously that makes it more difficult for Intel to actually test stability. But at the same time, they really should know how these CPUs degrade and what the tolerances are there before they start, releasing K and KS models. And again, that's another pitfall of overclocking that you don't really hear from the "but it makes it 20% faster" gang. I've done memory tuning before. I've made videos and stuff about it for AM4 processors and got phenomenal results. But I've also talked about in the channel before where the G-Skill CL14 Samsung B-Die memory, I increase the voltage, increase the timings to what was supposed to be safe levels, and within 6 months, one of the DIMM modules died. So,
that's the risk. It could be the memory control in the CPU too, right?
Like, that's right.
Anything.
Yeah, the memory may have died anyway. I can't say for sure that it was overclocking, but I've pretty much never had memory modules die. And the fact that the one time I tune and decide to use it long term to see what the results are like, within 6 months, memory stick, no good. So, there's a lot of pitfalls to overclocking. It's not as simple and straightforward as it's often made out to be. And that's why pretty much all reviewers, Gamers Nexus, Tom's Hardware, all of them, they test either stock configurations with like stock memory speeds or stock with XMP loaded, which technically isn't stock, but it's been the done thing for so long now that a lot of people just consider it to be stock.
Yeah, I think as well, potentially some of these issues are coming about because of Intel's loose specifications for what counts as stock, which is something that we've made dedicated videos about on Hardware Unbox before, where Intel has kind of got their two, both of them are stock configurations. They're both supported by Intel. You're allowed to do them. They're not technically overclocking, but there's obviously the TDP configuration where you set the long-term power limit to 125 watts or whatever, and then you've got your PL2 state, the higher power state, which runs briefly, and then it obviously drops down to your long-term power state. And then there's been the default configuration on some motherboards, which was running PL1 equals PL2, which sets the CPU to run well above 125 watts sustained. And there was a period, I think, a couple of generations ago, not quite sure which generation it was, but Intel decided to change the default of those stock configurations from the TDP spec to the more unlimited specification. So
yeah, I believe that was the introduction of 12th gen.
Yeah, so there's been some talk of, is this the motherboard vendors applying too aggressive settings from the factory? Should they be doing the TDP stock version as opposed to the more unlimited stock version? But it's hard to know for sure whether that's the motherboard vendors doing something that's actually out of spec, as in actually pushing the voltages beyond what Intel's allowing, or is it just the confusion from around this whole what is and what isn't stock from Intel, which is a lot more complicated and different compared to AMD, where there's more of a it is what it is, whereas Intel seems to allow all these different configurations.
We'll talk about it more when I get to the B650 testing later, but the AMD specifications, not necessarily tighter either. I think they've just had less troubles in recent times because the CPUs are significantly more power efficient.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
With the motherboard manufacturers, it's definitely the Wild West. They sort of do things randomly and try to get away with whatever they can. So that causes problems as well. But yeah, as you said, not entirely sure if it's a particular motherboard brand that's having these problems or if it's across all motherboards. Don't know. There's not enough information at this point in time, I guess.
Yeah, and I think even if it did come out that, there are potentially some issues with, let's say, the choice to run it in the more power unlimited states is causing these issues. It's still on Intel ultimately to validate that all the settings and configurations that motherboard vendors are running are good for the CPU. Like if this is the default configuration, and this is, again, this goes all the way back to the whole, before they changed the default configuration, some boards were going and pushing things unlimited. Some boards are sticking with the stock thing. It's on Intel to validate and mandate certain things to be done with their boards. The motherboards are branded Intel motherboards. There's the Intel sticker on the box. It's a kind of a co-effort between Intel and MSI, Gigabyte, Asus, ASRock, all those brands to get their everything tightened up. If there's a brand that is pushing the voltage limits too high on these CPUs and going above and beyond what Intel thinks is safe, then it's kind of on Intel to be like, hey guys, your motherboard that you've created using our brand and our name is going to kill these CPUs. So can you guys like please not do that?
Yeah, it's a tough one, and it's certainly a conversation where we could end up eating our words, because I suppose in some way we would have criticized a company like NVIDIA, who very tightly regulate what their partners can and can't do with their products, from clock speeds to configurations and whatnot. So there's not much freedom. I think probably EVGA talked to Gamers Nexus about this as well, where they couldn't really make a Kingpin or like a special edition card because, you know, NVIDIA wouldn't allow them to go stupid with power limits and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why graphics cards, in a sense, have become so boring. Like the Ventus models equal the Supreme X models in terms of performance and just about everything. There's a couple of degrees difference, but ultimately, how much difference does that make to the gamers? So in a sense, NVIDIA does a very good job for the most part. I know there's still power delivery problems and stuff on some of the boards and cooling. So maybe the power delivery is okay, but the partner hasn't done a great job of ensuring that like all the memory modules are cooled or stuff like that. And we do see less of that on the GeForce side than the Radeon side. But I think ultimately they do a pretty good job of ensuring that you get a good product, whereas Intel and then even AMD on the CPU side of things, you know, you can spend $150 on the motherboard and you can end up with throttling and you can lose 30% of your performance and you can that'll probably result in instability as well. Or you can spend $150 and get a board that works flawlessly, works with all memory frequencies and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a bit of a minefield there, especially on budget Intel motherboards, because, you know, we've done tons of testing where we've seen the results are just all over the place. There are boards that will run a 12900K, a 13900K, even a 14900K at maximum performance, and then there are boards where it's 60% slower and stuff like that, which is just insane. And unfortunately, we're starting to see that now with AMD processors as well. So just sort of to a lesser degree, I suppose, because, you know, the problem's not as significant because the CPUs do use considerably less power for, you know, all core productivity workloads.
Yeah, I think there is a difference between having freedom to make products good and having freedom to make products bad. Like, I feel like a lot of the openness that you get from, say, an Intel motherboard CPU specification side of things usually just allows motherboard makers to make bad products. Like, by having it so loose, they can just really just dump the bottom end out of the products, make them the most crappy garbage level things, label it your top of the line Z series motherboard or whatever, and that's all good because the Intel CPU is so broad that a TDP configuration is still a legitimate configuration, even if most other boards are using the more unlocked, the official proper maximum performance mode sort of thing. So I feel like NVIDIA, yeah, they've kind of sacrificed the ability for some vendors to go crazy and make even more premium products, but in tightening things up, they've generally prevented the Ventus model from being like the biggest piece of garbage you've ever seen that doesn't clock even to the levels that you see in reviews. Like, if you're buying generally the base model cards from NVIDIA, it delivers the performance that you see in the reviews, which is what really you want. Whereas with some of these motherboards, you know, you could see the performance that you show in your reviews with an unlocked motherboard, and then you get your, you know, entry-level $125 board or whatever, and it's suddenly 30% less performance. So they're kind of dialing a fine line there. Like, they're kind of allowing this wide spec, and now we're seeing these issues at the top end where potentially the spec being so high to achieve the highest level of performance is also maybe 10, maybe not even 10%, maybe it's like 2% too high. So yeah, I guess it's a difficult position for Intel to be in because potentially there's just a very slight miscalculation with binning of these parts. Like, maybe they tried to get in 5% more CPUs than they normally would have, and it's those 5% that have been the problematic CPUs. It's hard to say, I guess.
Yeah, also when you have a 14900K that uses a disgusting amount of power for an all-core workload, if you are pairing that motherboard, you're doing sort of the min-max thing, which you've talked about a lot. It could just be that the motherboards aren't good enough and they're not throttling the CPU quick enough, and that's resulting in stability problems as well. And I've seen that heaps of times. If you put a 14900K on a average to below average board and then run Cinebench, it'll often blue screen stock just because the power delivery is not good enough. So
yeah,
and I've talked about those cheap motherboard roundups that I've done as well. Admittedly, it's more likely to happen on the really cheap, you know, $100 boards. And people will make excuses for that, saying, well, you shouldn't be pairing, you know, a really expensive CPU with a $100 motherboard. And it's like, well, you know, gamers do things like that. So, and really, it claims compatibility. That's I guess the big sticking point for me whenever we have these, you know, VRM discussions. The absolute worst Z690, Z790, even B series boards, they all claim support for a 14900K. But you put a 14900K on there and the performance could be halved for an all-core workload, or you could run into mass stability issues.
It's supported. It works.
It fits in the socket.
Yeah, it's like, what does work mean? Like, what does support mean?
Yeah.
I would have thought it would mean supported at the maximum performance, the expected performance of the product, but they're saying it more like it boots and you can use it. And that's kind of the bare minimum.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's technically compatible, but also won't work at the, you know, expected or likely to work at the expected performance level. And I guess I'll, if you don't mind, I'll pivot into the B650 talk for a moment.
Yeah, let's get into it.
I won't say too much because obviously there's a dedicated video coming up probably a day after the podcast or around the same time as the podcast, but I guess not everyone will be interested in watching a 20-something minute video of me talking about new B650 boards. But there's, I think, 9 new boards that have been released since I did the 35-board roundup about a year ago now.
Yep.
So that's exciting because, or it should be exciting because people want to build on the AM5 platform. They want to upgrade their platform or build a new PC. So having good quality B650 motherboards that are affordable, like the ASRock B650M HDV, that was a good board that's $120 US. So I thought having more $120 US options or potentially $100 US options, maybe even cheaper than that, that would be a good thing. And I think there's like 4 or 5 new Gigabyte boards. There's 2 new MSI boards. There's no new ASUS boards. And there was 2 new ASRock boards, 2 or 3. So anyway, got my hands on all of those boards. And spoiler alert, I think 7 of the 9 were absolutely atrocious, like just trash tier garbage boards that did not need to exist. And the worst part is I have pricing for almost all of them, and they're as expensive or more expensive than the HDV. So...
Right, so this is almost like shrinkflation. You know how like, you know, you get your chocolate bar and it's currently, you know, they make it like 20% smaller at the same price and you just kind of accept that. I guess there's maybe a bit of motherboard shrinkflation occurring.
Yeah, Gigabyte released a B650M gaming Wi-Fi board, which sounds pretty cool. It's a gaming board.
Oh, yeah, nice.
And it's so bad. It's really bad. So... if you're going to put a Ryzen 5 7600 on these boards, it's going to work just fine. You know, your 8700Gs, your 8600G, even probably a Ryzen 7 7700 will work just fine. 7700X should also work fine. It's probably just the Ryzen 9 parts that are going to be problematic. So I know a lot of people are going to say, well, it's unfair to put a 7950X on these boards and expect them to work, which I totally disagree with for multiple reasons, but at the same time, I get where they're coming from. You want to build a cheap AM5 system because you don't want to invest in AM4. You may never buy a Ryzen 9 part. Even when you upgrade in the future, it might be, you know, an 8-core X3D part that's available in a couple of years from now. So if the board only supports 150 watts, that's fine. And again, I don't have too much of a problem with that opinion, that perspective. But at the same time, if for the same money you can buy a motherboard with the same features and a VRM that can run a 7950X at full tilt without any problems, you kind of want to know that, right? Because you would buy that board and not the garbage one. And then there are 2 other issues I have directly with the motherboard manufacturers on this that I've voiced my opinion countless times in the past about. As we've just talked about with the Intel stuff, all of these boards claim full compatibility with no sort of disclaimers that the 7950X will work on them, and they all claim 170 watts. I know they're probably just listing the TDP specifications. If you check the compatibility page, the manufacturer is telling you this CPU works on this board. And again, it's a technicality because it does work, but I've found instances where there's There's one example of a board so bad that the performance after 10 minutes of the 7950X halves. So total CPU package power drops to 90, less than 90 watts, I believe, from memory. So that's not good. Like it should be over 200 watts or about 200 watts. So there are some new B650 boards that are that bad, but yet the product page, the compatibility page, claims support for these Ryzen 9 processors. And then to add insult to injury to make this situation even worse, in all cases, ASRock, ASUS, MSI, Gigabyte, if you go to the product pages for their cheapest, worst B650 boards, and all of them, all four manufacturers have a board that won't power the 7950X correctly. In all four instances, you go to the product page, it'll say unparalleled power delivery through our, you know, they'll have that right at the top in I think all four instances, but all four of them are guilty of this to varying degrees. And then you scroll down to the power delivery section and there'll be a whole poorly worded spiel about how this motherboard has precise precision power delivery that powers the CPUs to maximum performance to get every last bit out of your Ryzen processor thanks to enhanced VRMs and all this kind of... And MSI even go as far to say is that their MSI's B650M-B and -P, which both suck and have hard power limits to 90 watts and 135 watts, both of them provide optimal conditions for CPU overclocking, I believe is the exact wording they use on their product pages.
No.
So it's not really good enough, is it, that we've got these boards that are powering these CPUs at 20%, 30%, 40%, 50% of their actual capabilities while listing official support, and then the marketing material brags about how unbelievably good the power delivery is. So anyway, I call out all four of them, give examples of them in the video. Not much more I can do than that, but without significant community pushback, we'll just continue to see this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think the motherboard manufacturers, maybe it's more an Intel and AMD, they've struggled to come to grips with these board manufacturers wanting to make these crappy boards. Like, clearly they want to make the crappy boards, right? Like, they want to create these low-cost things for people who, as you say, they might only ever buy a Ryzen 5 part. So they're kind of, the justification is you don't need to spend big on the VRM or other features because you need an entry-level board for an entry-level CPU. All well and good, don't provide the extra components, save a bit of money, even though, as you've pointed out, some of them do just cost the same amount of money. But I think maybe the solution to this, and is probably a solution that they'll never go with, but is to create a new chipset or new branding for these motherboards that indicates that they are the entry-level solution. Because B650 covers all the parts, right? Like from the low-end stuff right to the high-end stuff. And clearly the better stuff is going to be more suited to your 7950Xs. And now you've got these crappy low-tier boards which are designed for Ryzen 5. They have to be categorized in the same bucket. Whereas if there was a different chipset, like what's the worst letter? I don't know, J. No one likes J, right? If there was a J650 series, right, then you could make that the entry-level series. And I don't know, like it's very clearly then they could put these products in that series. They're distinguished from the regular B650 series. They could be a little cheaper and then people can buy them and it's known that these are the Ryzen 5 only boards. And then you could delete the claims saying that they're supporting the 7950X, even though the power limits are obviously below the level of that CPU. You could reassess everything there and make sure that, you know, it's working properly and that everyone knows that, you know, that's what the product is. But at the moment, they continue to make everything go into the same category. It's even worse with the Z series stuff where the Z is meant to be the high tier products, right? And you've got these, you've got the lower tier boards in the Z series, which probably wouldn't even pass scratches like a B series board half the time. So
it's more egregious on the Intel side for sure. And I agree with what you're saying. Even the A series could be for that. They're sort of OEM targeted chipset series anyway that, you know, you can still buy them on the retail market. But I think the A series would fulfill that role. Definitely on the AMD side, the X series and the B series should run all models at maximum power without a problem. But for budget builders, I don't have a problem with there being sort of crappy tier cheap models for budget builders. Like if you're the kind of person that's going to buy a Ryzen 5 7600 or even the 7800X 3D is a relatively low powered part, like 120 watt TDP. It'll use a bit more than that probably, but it's a low powered part. Very easy to power, don't need an expensive VRM. So you can run some very impressive hardware on some pretty cheap, crappy VRMs. So I'm okay with those boards existing. I just don't want, like you said, those boards claiming support for CPUs they can't fully power. And then I want it to be very clear either with the chipset type or the product name that it's a 90-watt motherboard or a 100-watt motherboard.
Mm.
So
I don't think that goes far enough, though, because I think there's some buyers, like if you're thinking about the lower, like just your casual mainstream buyer, are they really going to know, like I know you can look in the spec sheet, right, but they're going to know that like a Ryzen 9 is above 90 watts and a Ryzen 5 is below and therefore it's only compatible with Ryzen 5? I think it needs to be clearer than that.
Sure, I agree, but at the same time, like even if we make it that the A series is the Wild West and can be basically anything because we've designated the A series chipsets as your trash tier, Wild West, do whatever the hell you want. You know, people who are trying to look to save every last dollar don't really know that the A series is necessarily that either. So
yeah, I guess that's true.
I guess first and foremost for the safety of the consumer is the compatibility page. If you're going to do your due diligence, you're going to look into what, if you're building a PC and you're sort of a novice PC builder, you should be looking at compatibility pages, QVLs and stuff like that for purchasing, you know, pairing your memory with your motherboard, or that's the sort of stuff you should be doing. And those guides can't be broken because otherwise you've just got no guide to work out what works with what. So the best thing they can do, regardless of everything else, the motherboard name, the chipset used and all that, is actually just have the CPUs that are properly supported on the CPU support list and not claim that your four phase, you know, 60 watt power delivery supports a 200 watt processor, because obviously it doesn't.
Yeah, I think they clearly need to just change the definition of what support means. Support should mean running at the performance, the maximum performance of the part, not it will boot or it will fit into the socket or whatever the current definition is, because clearly they're just weaseling out of it, right?
Yeah, like, because well, a 20 watt cooler is compatible with a 200 watt CPU. They are socket compatible.
Yeah,
you can install it on it. Like it definitely works, but it's very dodgy to say that a 20 watt CPU cooler is compatible, works with a 200 watt CPU, because yeah, for obvious reasons.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Another news story I saw this week is that Intel is discontinuing the 13th gen K-series processors, which is, I guess, quite soon that you would say from these sorts of, like, they do obviously discontinue CPUs all the time. Like, eventually people aren't interested in them anymore, so they discontinue them. But the 13th gen's only just over a year old. Obviously, there's the 14th gen now, but apparently come May 24th, which isn't that far away from now, they will be officially discontinued, the Core i5, Core i7, and Core i9 in the K-series. You will not be able to, well, you still will be able to buy the remaining stock. They're just not going to be producing any more of them. But, I mean, let's be honest, it's not like they're discontinuing Raptor Lake, is it?
Yeah. I don't even know what to say to this one. It's a bit of a non-story, right? like they're not really discontinuing 13th gen at all. I mean, you can't buy the 13th gen parts that they've probably been selling at a bit of a discount just to get rid of. And Raptor Lake Refresh is 13th gen with a different name. So it's not, while I get that it seems unusual on the surface that they're still selling and they haven't discontinued 12th gen, yet they're discontinuing 13th gen to continue on with 14th gen. So you sort of have 14th gen and 12th gen. Why is 13th gen gone? It's because 14th gen is 13th gen. So
yeah, they renamed it, right? I mean, obviously from Intel's perspective, I mean, like you have a look on Newegg, a 13900K, you can buy those for $480 at the moment. And the 14900K, which is the same thing, is priced at $545. So what would Intel rather be doing? Selling you the 14900K for over $540 or the 13900K for below $500? Yeah. Like obviously they want to sell you the 14900K. So that's why they've discontinued the 13th gen model.
Especially when they're the same thing. So they're just shifting focus there. So, yep.
That's it for this story.
I've got another topic. I hope you've got another topic, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, right? I just thought it was a funny story. Like, obviously, they're just trying to discontinue these parts because they can make a bit more money doing it. But, I mean, this isn't going to change the stock levels.
Like, well, I was just reading the Tom's Hardware article. I don't know if it's written by... I don't want to pick on the person that's written it, but at the end they say, it's unfortunate to see Raptor Lake's overclockable chips go. It's like, well, are we though? They're not really going. But it's good news that 14th gen CPUs are starting to come down in price. It's like, well, that's how it works. They're phasing them out and then they'll make 14th gen a little bit more price competitive, but they'll probably be making a bit more margin on those parts. So, yeah, it's not unfortunate to see them go. I mean, it's probably only unfortunate in the sense that the prices that 13th gen are selling at, they probably won't get back down to that quickly because, again, they're trying to extend the margins for as long as possible.
Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, like, it doesn't seem like these processes have exactly been flying off the shelves. So I don't imagine that come May 24th or whenever the date was, May 24th, you go on newegg.com, you're looking for a 14th or 13th gen processor, you'll probably still be able to get the 13900K if you really want to. It will still be available for a while because, like these CPUs are not exactly flying off shelves. No. And hopefully, you know, by the time that the 13th gen parts do genuinely get fully discontinued and they're no longer available, that the 14900K will be a bit more reasonably priced. And by that time, I mean, we'll probably have Zen 5, which is scheduled for release, you know, in the upcoming months. I'm sure the next generation of Intel processors as well isn't that far away. So by the time that happens, it's probably not going to be too much of an issue, I wouldn't have thought.
And I was just saying, on that note, Intel, like, they really do need to rethink their strategy and not just keep doing what they've always done when they had no competition. You can sort of get away with doing whatever it is you're doing when your competition is absolutely nowhere in terms of performance, power efficiency, all that sort of stuff. But with AMD... so really in control. I know whenever I talk about AMD being dominant, we always see someone in the comments saying, you're crazy, Intel easily outsells AMD. And that is absolutely not the case in the retail market and hasn't been for many years now. They may, there's almost certainly outselling them in terms of laptop CPUs. I doubt it's the case for new servers. That would be quite shocking to me. Again, I'm not super familiar with like the laptop and server markets, but certainly for the retail CPU market, which is what we're interested in, Intel has been copping a shellacking. They've been getting absolutely decimated for years now, and it's continued to get worse with every year. So all the retailers, distributors that I talk to, 14th gen since release, just it ain't moving. It's not moving at all. It's very hard to sell Intel CPUs, whereas despite the market demand being quite low, AMD CPUs are still selling quite well. And there's some very obvious reasons for why that is. In terms of performance, AMD CPUs are very competitive with Intel CPUs while generally consuming a lot less power. But I think the big draw card is stuff like people have seen. Like, I know people still, I guess, Intel fans try to deny the success of AM4, but there's no denying the success of AM4, right, at this point in time.
It's the best platform ever.
It's the best platform ever, hands down. There's really no discussion. There's nothing that comes close to what AM4's delivered. And again, fully aware that AMD tried to screw that up by axing support. And thank goodness that the enthusiast community didn't let them do that. But AM4 was wonderful. Whether AM5 will be as wonderful is yet to be seen, but we know there are future CPUs. Zen 5 this year will be coming to AM5, which is obviously a big reason for jumping on AM5 over the last year or so, if you had the opportunity to do so or the need to do so. And where does that leave? Like, we've discussed it already. Like, again, performance from Intel, not so bad, pretty competitive, sometimes better in some ways, worse in other ways when compared to AMD. But how, if you're a CPU reviewer, Tim, if you were a CPU reviewer, what do you recommend LGA 1700 for? Who do you recommend LGA 1700 to?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to make a justification for it outside of like niche workloads where potentially like they are the more powerful processor, really. I mean, it's pretty hard to justify for most buyers, I would have thought. But yeah, I totally agree with you that Intel does need to change their strategy. And I think things like, you know, the discontinuing of these parts is kind of like, are they really endearing themselves to the community by discontinuing the better value products that everyone knows is exactly the same? Like, a lot of the success of AM4, apart from when they tried to screw themselves over, was, you know, really thinking about what are the features that the community genuinely wants. Like, what's Intel not delivering? Mm-hmm. And then we're going to deliver those things. So things like, for example, it's less of a selling point now, but I remember all the processors being unlocked was like a really big talking point when these parts came out. When you had an Intel CPU, you had to basically spend more money to get the unlocked overclocking capable part. Mm-hmm. And AMD just came in and was like, well, all of our parts are going to support that. And then you get all the other benefits like the platform longevity and things like that.
There's also the budget chipsets being able to overclock memory and cores, whereas, again,
that's right.
Intel's improved that with memory overclocking over time, but that was a big deal back in the day.
Yeah, it feels like there's still a bit of that old school mindset with these sorts of things. Like, I don't want to say that discontinuing a product is, you know, highly indicative of their mindset and all sorts of things, because it's just discontinuing a product like that. That's what happens sometimes.
I was talking more about speaking to the slow sales of 14th gen and what they need to do to make future generations competitive with a strong AMD.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they need to do exactly what AMD's done, which is look at what are the things that, you know, buyers are buying CPUs for right now. Like, what are the features that the community wants, and actually implement them, and not just go about doing things your own way and thinking that the old way of doing it from a decade ago is the way that things are going to work today. People are clearly accustomed to and want long platform support, because changing the motherboard is the worst part of upgrading your computer. Like, no one wants to upgrade the motherboard. It's the worst part to upgrade. So ensuring that people can buy the high-performance CPUs and put them into the product that they've already got sitting in their computer right now, I think is probably the most key feature that they need to execute on. And we've talked about that in previous podcasts. But I think, like, the mindset at Intel has been for so long that, like, the motherboard is almost part of the sales equation. Like, they want high CPU sales and high motherboard chipset sales, because then they're getting things from both fronts. But I think what they need to think more about is, you want to encourage people to buy a good quality motherboard so that you get, you know, good sales of the chipset there, but then the primary driver of sales should be the CPUs themselves. You want to be making it so that every generation, the CPU itself is offering something to someone who's already on the platform, so that there's like an upgrade path, there's performance on offer from an upgrade, even from one generation to the next, because we've seen not everyone does it, but with some AM4 owners, people would upgrade from like a Zen 2 to a Zen 3 CPU because they see the value in doing that. So by keeping the motherboard as a product that you can keep in your system for a long period of time, you can potentially encourage more CPU sales, because people upgrade more frequently, and there's just, they haven't really announced anything for their upcoming line, right? But there's been no indication over the time that we've seen AM4 and AM5 come out that Intel has gotten that message.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, we often see from some viewers comments saying that people don't upgrade every generation. You guys hype up platform longevity far too much. It's not nearly of as much benefit to most people as you make it out to be. It's like, well, no, that's definitely not true. Also, having the flexibility is a good thing. Just for reasons discontinuing support is not a good thing. You definitely don't want to encourage corporations to do that because they definitely do not want to give you platform longevity. AMD didn't want to give it to you, even though they could. They still didn't want to do it, and they were in a way forced to do it. And Intel seems like they need to be forced for in the same way that AMD needed to be forced for their own good. Intel needs to be forced. They're like a child. They need to be forced for their own good. Like we know what's best for you, Intel. It sounds arrogant, I know, but the proof's in the pudding. And for the people who say people don't upgrade every generation, platform longevities, it's like, no, the evidence is already there. You're wrong. You're wrong. The statistics are in. The evidence is there. Tons and tons and tons of people who bought first, second, third generation CPUs upgraded to a part like the 5800X 3D or the 5700X, the 5600. Those CPUs all sold in insane volumes. I've spoken to major, major retailers, and they say parts like the Ryzen 5 5600, they've sold more of those than any other CPU in the history of selling CPUs by a country mile.
Yeah,
and imagine me telling you that in 2017 that this new Ryzen thing, AMD is going to sell more of their Zen 3 six-core CPUs than Intel's ever sold of a CPU.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, right?
Imagine your response if I told you that.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I just think, like, how much more could they have gotten the message at this point, right? Like, everyone's saying this. The sales numbers are saying it. They must know internally that they're not getting a significant amount of money coming in from these CPU sales. But obviously, like, it's hard because the decisions to, you know, how long a platform is going to be supported for, what are we designing CPUs for, is made years prior to the current market that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe like 13th and 14th gen, those decisions would have been made back when AMD was a bit less competitive. But still, like, there's no excuse for the next generation. There's absolutely zero excuse for 15th gen. They're probably going to change the, you know, it's not going to be 15th gen anymore, but you know what I mean.
It's going to be the next generation.
Future generations. The evidence is in when they were making those parts. There was no doubting what they were facing. And so there's no excuse if they can't come out and say things regarding platform support, platform longevity, you know, that. We've talked previously about how they're probably not going to be able to solve all the areas to performance and efficiency that they need to in the one generation. And by that, I mean, it's probably going to be pretty hard to make the parts perform as well as they should and be as efficient as they should at the same time. It's pretty unlikely that's going to happen. But doing things like platform longevity and allowing people that if they do want to get like a good value processor now, upgrade in the future, it's an easy win. Like that. There's no, you can have poor quality CPUs that don't perform as well, but still offer that feature. So yeah,
the only way, there's two options. The only way forward for Intel, one option is to copy AMD and offer platform longevity for at least three, if not four generations. Mm-hmm. Or if they don't want to do that, their only other option is to annihilate AMD. So
yeah, and performance.
Yeah. Bring out a CPU generation that makes Zen 5 look like the FX series, which, good luck. But, I mean, that would be pretty impressive, pretty awesome to see. So they've got to put themselves in a position where there's just no competition. Intel CPUs are so good. And when you were talking about, you know, there's no excuse for the next generation, I all the Intel employees that I speak to and have come across on the CPU front, they seem to still have that mindset that there is no competition. Intel's the best. And the local guys and stuff seem a bit miffed as to, like, well, hang on, you're telling me that people aren't buying 14th gen and they're buying this AMD stuff? Like, they don't seem to be able to process that. They've drank too much Kool-Aid or something. I'm not sure what it is. But they're very miffed as to how that could be a thing. Like, it doesn't make sense to them that Intel's not number one.
Yeah, and I think I totally agree with that. And I don't think you even need to look at, like, individual employee mindsets. You can just see from the actions that Intel has taken in the CPU market that is pretty much the opinion that they have. I'm sure there's at an executive level, I mean, I was going to say, like, they'd have to be pretty clueless not to know these things, but you can never rule out that that's the case, because there are certainly organizations where people who are clueless do get to the executive level, but I don't believe that's the case.
Denial is a powerful thing, Tim.
Typically, I do not believe that at any of these companies that those people are the dominant sort of people in the executive groups. I think that at some level, Intel are aware of these things, but you know, it depends on the market that you're looking at. I think, as you say, in laptops, which, I mean, laptop chips outsell desktop chips, generally speaking. So if a lot of the focus is going to laptop chips, then they can deprioritize things like desktop chips. Similarly, if they're getting a lot of sales in, say, OEMs systems, so desktop pre-builds that are not do-it-your-own, build-it-yourself sort of off-the-shelf components, if there's Intel still does reasonably well. They certainly punch above their weight in those categories. So if that's still doing well for them, again, maybe there's the incentive there to, hey, we're not going to offer platform support because that forces our OEM partners to continually buy, you know, the new motherboards each time. Maybe the OEM partners like that because then people, then end users are buying OEM systems and they're unable to upgrade them, which is probably something that an HP or a Dell are like really keen on that being the case. They definitely do not want to have new CPUs supported in OEM systems because then obviously people will buy an entire new PC instead of just replacing the CPU. So there's a whole bunch of reasons why they make those decisions, but if they're legitimately serious about competing in the DIY space again, getting the mindshare back, which eventually the mindshare from enthusiasts and gamers turns things like OEM sales because the brand is so in such a poor state that no one's interested in those parts anymore. But you know what I'm getting at, right? Like if they want to turn the main DIY stuff that we care about, then there's only one path and it's the path that we've talked about really. All right, I'm going to talk about this 8700F and 8600F for about all of 1 second because AMD's made some new chips. They're on their website. They call the 8700F and 8600F. They're an 8700G and an 8600G without the graphics part.
Whoa.
They're slightly lower clocked. All right, let's move on.
Actually, what? Well, we've already determined that the... I'm not going to let you move on, Tim. I'm going to strike up an inspiring conversation about these. I'm going to need 20 minutes.
All right.
And probably a team, a think tank. So the 8700G, we came to the conclusion that CPU really doesn't make sense. We dedicated a podcast to it. Denial has been strong on that one as well. But no, the 8700G doesn't make sense for the vast majority. Like you have to concoct the most interesting of scenarios for the 8700G to be of value. So...
I'm looking at those comments on this podcast now after that one.
Yeah.
We'll see the same stuff again. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. It's just what it is, guys. Don't fight it. The 8700G doesn't make sense. So what does the 8700F have to cost him? So the 8700G is $330 and you can buy a Ryzen 7 7700 for $290. And then a Ryzen 7600 is only $200. Yeah, it's a 6-core processor, but it has a big old fat L3 cache and it will be faster than an 8700F for the vast majority of gaming now and into the future because that's just how the design of those CPUs is going to play out. So that being the case, what are they going to charge for an 8700F? How much cheaper can it be than the G? What are those graphics worth? I mean, I know they're the entire point of the product and removing them, it's like, but why?
And obviously these are OEM-only parts as well, so the price is probably not going to be something that the general buyer is going to have access to. But I mean, we're talking about, well, it's a slightly lower clocked version of the 8700G. So even on the CPU side of things, you would expect it to not be quite as fast.
Sure.
And then you're saying, yeah, I guess it's difficult, right? Because I expect gamers, they probably wouldn't even consider an 8700F, or at least most gamers wouldn't consider it over either the 7700 or 7600. So you're really left with like maybe for some productivity users, but then for productivity, you also then have to buy a discrete graphics card to even make the PC work in the first place. So it's kind of like a weird processor again where it's in a difficult position. But they're going to have to factor in, right, the gaming performance being at the absolute best to 7600, but probably below.
Mm-hmm.
And then the productivity performance being probably between a 7700 and a 7600.
For the most part. About a 7700 for most productivity because most productivity aren't that cache sensitive, but that's the problem, right? So it can't be more than two. It it has to be less than $290. So you, then you're paying $40 for a crappy integrated GPU, which, okay, I mean, that's,
it has to be like $250. I think they kind of have to split the middle to some degree, because you need to make it not so cheap that anyone who wants the 8-core for productivity just buys all the 8700Fs and completely ignores the 7700. But you can't make it too much more than the 7600, because then gamers have like no reason to buy it at all. Mm-hmm. So
basically, they're probably going to sell it for $300 and make it OEM only and make a tidy profit on silicon that they couldn't have sold otherwise, because that's what OEM market's for. The OEM market is the biggest dumping ground of just trash tier motherboards and things that don't make sense.
Yeah, you can probably buy these from AMD in some like ludicrous deal to try and flog them off. And they're just, they'll be selling those at, you know, they'll be trying to portray them as equivalent to other processors when they're not quite on the OEM side.
Yeah, it's part of the reason why they got the 8000 series naming as well, because an 8700F has to be better than a 7700, right? Like that logic dictates that's the case. So anyone buying an OEM system is going to be pumped that they managed to get an 8700 rather than a 7700, because that's the current generation latest thing. So yeah, they're sneaky with that stuff, obviously.
The final topic that I wanted to have a look at today, because we are getting up to about an hour into this podcast, is Intel XeSS 1.3, which is a new version of their upscaling technology, which is bringing quite a few changes to things. First of all, improvements to image quality. So they've updated the model to provide better detail and less ghosting for both the XMX and DP4A models. So if you're not super familiar with XeSS, there are two different models as part of the technology. The XMX version runs on Intel Arc GPUs. It's kind of an exclusive version that makes use of their AI accelerators. Then the DP4A model is used across the vast majority of other products. So even in some of Intel's own integrated, you know, graphics processors and those sort of things use that model. So anyway, they've improved the model for both of those versions. So they've shown in their little XeSS 1.3 announcement post, this is quite a good illustration of this in what appears to be one of the like a Dragon games, I think, where they're showing a pretty significant decrease in artifacts. I've played around with it just a little bit in a couple of games by doing DLL swaps, getting the SDK version, DLL swapping it in. It looks pretty good, but I haven't done any in-depth analysis. So that's very much just a surface level, it looks decent sort of thing. And we'll probably roll in, you know, XeSS 1.3 testing into the next big, you know, next time we're looking at upscaling technologies. But from a quality standpoint, it looks pretty good. There were some issues with the models that didn't make it quite as good as you would see from like DLSS often. But even with XeSS 1.2, I typically found it to look pretty good and at times better than FSR at the same sort of scaling factors and things like that. So yeah, making it better is definitely a step in the right direction. One of the things I found interesting with this though is that they've decided to rename all of the quality presets. So by that they're claiming that this creates a performance improvement at each quality setting. So for example, XeSS quality mode and XeSS bounce mode now perform better in the 1.3 version versus the 1.2 version on an FPS standpoint. But that is because, for example, XeSS quality goes from a 1.5x scale factor to 1.7x. So they're lowering the render resolution and doing more upscaling at the same quality level. Same with balance. It goes from 1.7x to 2x. Performance goes from 2x to 2.3x. So Intel is kind of the first of the three brands to decouple, or at least go against the grain when it comes to the scaling factors. FSR and DLSS, they all mean roughly the same thing. Quality means roughly a 1.5x scale factor. But now Intel's decided that, hey, you know, we can, I don't know, confuse people a little bit or attempt to get a bit more performance out of this.
Are they claiming improved image quality at what was traditionally the same settings while also coming from a lower base resolution? Or like
what? That is, yes. So they're claiming that the quality of XeSS is now good enough that they can lower the render resolution because of the quality improvement. So they're basically saying at the same resolution, like render resolution that we had previously, we can now get much more quality out of it. Looks a lot better. So what we're going to do is, in addition to offering you those quality gains, we're also going to reduce the render resolution to get more performance. So when you turn on quality mode, it now either is going to look slightly better instead of much better and offer you more performance. So they're kind of, I guess, trying to target both things at the same time. Mm-hmm. I haven't done like an in-depth analysis to see exactly is it actually looking better than the old version while mm-hmm. also performing better. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of interesting to rename the presets that I think, I don't know whether people know for sure what each of the presets means, but they've kind of meant the thing that they've meant for a while now and changing that up and claiming a performance gain. I don't know. I don't think it's not necessarily misleading, but there's something about it I don't quite like.
It definitely seems dodgy at first, but then you need a detailed look at it to really know what's actually going on. Because if the image quality, well, they're claiming two things. They're saying the image quality is improved and so is performance. So really, both of those things need to be true, right?
Yeah, that's right. That should mean that quality versus quality, the new quality mode is better than the old quality mode and it performs better, which would be a great result.
So if that's true, I'm not too fussed with how they've gone about it.
Yeah, that's right. If you look at like comparing the same scale factor, so for example, the old XeSS 1.2 quality mode was 1.5x scaling. Now that's XeSS ultra quality. So XeSS 1.3 ultra quality gives you the 1.5x scale factor. And if you look at some of their performance charts that they've provided, it looks like the new model is slightly slower. Mm-hmm. So when you match up like ultra quality, at least they're claiming, for example, in this new preset thing that they've got on their website, for example, XeSS 1.3 ultra quality, 49 FPS, XeSS, the previous version, quality, 50 FPS. So both those are the same scale factor. They've dropped one FPS. So you know, there's different ways to get more performance out of these techniques. You could improve the algorithm to make it run more efficiently. So you gain performance at the same scale factor by making your code a little better. But often that may come with quality degradations. So the better way to do it sometimes may be just to change the scale factor, which is kind of what they've done here. And potentially by gaining quality, they've actually lost a small amount of, like a tiny amount of performance, which is why they might have, you know, decided to shake up some of the scale factors. And on top of that, XeSS typically performed a little worse on like your NVIDIA or AMD GPUs as it was. So by making these changes, the quality mode of XeSS should probably perform more like you would see from an FSR quality mode on an AMD GPU, which is potentially what they're targeting here as well. So while the scale factor may be different, the performance you get from each mode may be roughly the same. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of a weird one there. I'll get to looking at this eventually at some point. Monitor content, this keeping me busy at the moment. But yeah, next time that we look at, you know, a major update into upscaling technologies, because there's now DLSS 3.7 that's come out, so a new iteration of DLSS. There's the FSR 3.1 announcement from a little while back, but that needs game integration, and now XeSS 1.3. At some point at this year, I'll look at all these things together and we'll see where things lie. But yeah, I thought XeSS 1.3 looked interesting, at least promising from the surface level. So yeah. Let's take a break. Let's come back and let's talk about boring lives. All right, we're back. How's your grass going, Steve? Mine's getting a little greener. It's almost mowing time for me.
Yep. I'm probably going to go look at mowing after we finish with our little podcast chat. So that's exciting.
Oh, interesting.
First time in well over a month. But yeah, no, it's lots of rain and stuff. So it's doing the grass growing thing. So exciting stuff, I guess, depending on who you talk to. But yeah, no, we'll mow the lawns. So looking forward to that. Other exciting things in my life was we lost power for half an hour.
Interesting.
Ago. So the generator kicked in, powered everything, and it was good because Baylen and I were at the end of the day. I was finishing a VRM thermal test, and I was like 10 minutes off finishing the hour-long test. So I would have had to start that again, and Baylen was encoding a video and was at about 90%. So he would have lost probably over an hour's work had the Blue Eddy AC 180s not kept everything powered while the generator kicked in and ran for half an hour. So it was only a little power outage. It was when we've had a bit of rain come across again. So yeah, there was something happening. But anyway, that was good. And what else? What else has been happening that I can tell you about, Tim? Apart from work.
Your AFL team was crap.
No. We don't need to talk about footy this week. Well, I actually, after the last podcast, Melbourne beat the Crows. So that's all the football we need to talk about. So my team beat Tim's team last week and my team sucked last night. And now Tim's trying to deflect and pick on me for that. But we're not going to talk about AFL.
I can't do too much picking because Adelaide are winless. They have not won this year yet, and there are no wins in sight. I look at the schedule, I'm like, I can't see the win coming anytime soon. They do play the last place team, West Coast. I think it's round 11, so I'll pencil that one in.
I hope you don't go 10-0.
To be fair, I should probably check because potentially we will be at Computex in that round. Let me have a look. No, it's May 26th, so we won't quite have left for Computex yet. So I will be able to watch the Adelaide Crows, who will probably be 17th at that point, versus the West Coast Eagles at 18th out of 18 teams on Sunday, May 26th. That'll be our chance. That'll be the one chance.
Well, you just prompted a thought. So I know it's sort of – well, it is boring life stuff kind of, but it's also – work stuff, which makes up 99% of my boring life. So
sure.
Loophole. I've been planning our Computex trip while you've been sitting back playing with monitors and, I don't know, doing whatever it is that you do. So I've each year to go, we need a sponsor, generally a primary sponsor and a secondary sponsor. So I'm in negotiations to lock those in. Meanwhile, I've outlaid a fair bit of money to pay for four flights. We're taking four of us over. So there'll be Balen, Chris, Tim, and myself. Those of you who are on the Discord will know Merch Minion Chris, who helps out with merchandise and a few other things on the channel. So all four of us are going to Computex. Flights are booked, paid for. Accommodation is booked and paid for. We needed two hotel rooms. And I guess the reason I'm telling you this and thought about it was because two of the companies, so MSI usually sponsors us for the primary sponsor, which everyone will be aware of. That's happened for what, like 5 years now, something like that, Tim. And I'm in negotiations with two of those companies for our sponsorship. And I'm about to release a video that craps on both of those companies. So
they'll be happy. That's good for our negotiations.
I'm not sure you're good at negotiating, Tim, but you're probably better than me because I'm the one that's this. So normally, I guess if we were very profit money driven, I would delay this content till after the deal's done and the dotted line's signed. But I mean, they released these B650 boards and they are trash. So
But that's not how we've never operated hardware unboxed.
I was chuckling to myself when I made the realization that I was in negotiations with two of these companies for our Computex sponsorship and our travel, you know, paying for our flights and all that, because I've outlaid the money. It's a significant amount of money that I've paid and locked in for us to go. And now we need to get a sponsor to make back that money to fund our trip to go to Taiwan. And you know, one of the companies, we're obviously talking with MSI because they sponsor us and have done so for the last 5 or so years, but there are a couple of other companies that are interested in sponsoring Hardware Unboxed to go over. And it just so happens that I'm crapping on all of them in a video that's going out tomorrow night during these negotiations. So I'm calling their products terrible, trash, garbage, probably 6 times each. So I'm just...
yeah, they'll be happy. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, as a businessman, I'm not very good at this. But anyway, we have fun.
Oh, well, prioritize the content over the deals. We'll be fine either way.
I guess so.
Oh, that was an interesting one. Also, it was funny earlier, you showing me the pictures of the hotel room where it's not clear whether there's actually any privacy in the bathroom whatsoever. There's potentially a fully clear window between the bed and desk part of the room and the bathroom part, which is, I guess, designed for couples, right? But I don't want to be walking around having a shower and going to the toilet and stuff while you're over in the other part and I can just like eyeball you while that's happening, right? Like, weird.
I hope the deluxe rooms that we've booked aren't quite the same because we have two beds. We have two queen size beds in each room. But yeah, that's going to be really, really awkward.
yeah, not great.
So we'll Yep, there'll be an interesting vlog to come for Patreon members.
We're going to do some censoring? Are we going to be like, Baylor, you have to go and outline some various bits and bobs?
Baylor's like, I don't get paid enough for this crap. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to go or what we're exactly in for there. But, yes, the new hotel we're staying at, which didn't exist or wasn't open, I don't believe, last time we went to Taiwan. So it's a new, really, really nice hotel. Looks great. But the only rooms that we've seen people upload stuff for, have this this viewing area for those who are. Balen and I and Tim and Chris are going to have, or Chris and I rather, and Balen and Tim are going to have.
Not ideal. But anyway, we'll get to that one when it comes. But I guess we'll give you some updates maybe on the podcast or our BTS content and stuff once we get to Computex. We see the rooms. We'll see whether there's the package viewing screen or not, or whether they've maybe frosted it, which would be nice. But yeah, obviously that'll be an interesting one. But yeah, looking forward to Computex this year. Should be good year for releases. Actually, it sounds like you're going to be quite busy towards, if all these rumors and things are going to play out as suggested. It looks like the second half of 2024 and early parts of next year are going to be very busy for you. So that's good, because things right now are not busy.
No, it sucks for sure. So I'm hoping we get some interesting announcements. And we have, for the first time, we've been trying to do it for years, but we've set aside Friday to catch up with Steve and the gang from Gamers Nexus. So we'll be filming something for their channel and we'll look at filming something for our channel. I'm not sure if it'll be more of a podcast format, Q&A format or whatever. I'm not sure, or just a general discussion about the show and some opinions. I don't know. But, yeah, we'll be getting together with them and doing that. So I'm most excited for that. That'll be good.
Yeah, that should be nice, especially towards the end of the show, because I think come the Friday and Saturday, we'll still be there on the Saturday as well. There's not a lot going on. I remember last year sort of waiting around. I think I actually got sick, so I probably slept most of the day. But usually it's just like sitting around doing not that much. You're kind of twiddling your thumbs until the flight goes. And yeah, so it'll be good to catch up with some of the other creators that are there. Good time to catch up with those sorts of shows. And yeah, by the sounds of things, a bit more excitement at this upcoming Computex than we would have seen in previous years, which will make the show much more interesting to cover. So yeah, I guess that pretty much does it for this episode of the Hardware Unboxed podcast. Lots of interesting topics and a bit of Intel focus in this one, which is good, because I like talking about CPUs, not just the boring, depressing wasteland that is the GPU market at the moment. So interesting things happening for CPUs, so I appreciate that. If you do want to support us, we have got, just subscribe to the YouTube channel and just, I don't know, what do people do with podcasts? Reviews or something? I don't know where the reviews go. Like, you put them somewhere, I don't know, that helps with recommendations. I hear that that's the case, but I don't know if it's true. Maybe do it.
Yeah, I don't know if we want people reviewing our podcast.
It's not a great podcast, so
I don't know if we want
we'll have
that
to improve
too.
The quality before we're worthy
give
of
us,
the
give us like a year, maybe two.
Yeah, that's probably fair. No reviews at the moment then.
Yeah, hold off.
Yeah, just listen to us, I guess. It's probably the best way. That's pretty much it. So, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.